For some of us, it's easy to think about personalities in the landscape in an abstract way. We can think of mountains or beaches or rivers as companions, ascribing something like human attributes to them. It went a little further than that for our next guest. Will Falk is an attorney and activist, and he became the legal representative for a river, the mighty and long Colorado River at that. He writes of getting to know his client in the book How Dams Fall. It's in the Little Bound Books essay series. And Will Falk is making his way around Oregon talking about it. Will Falk, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hello, I'm really excited to be here.
Is your Oregon tour still going on? I know with event cancellations, I have to ask that of everybody we talk to.
Yes, it is, actually. I will be in Newport tonight, Roseburg tomorrow night, and Eugene on Friday night.
Okay, good. Glad to hear you're still available for people to talk to. Talk about, if you would, Will, the legal case and how you came to represent the Colorado River.
Yeah, in 2017, I helped to file a first-in-the-nation federal lawsuit seeking rights for a major ecosystem, the Colorado River. In that case, we listed the Colorado River as the plaintiff, and I, along with four other people in the Colorado River Basin, served as next friends to the Colorado River. Next friends is a legal concept that allows people who are competent and have the mental capacity to represent others who are not. So a common example is adults serve as next friends for children in certain kinds of cases. In that case, we were seeking a declaration from the federal court in Denver that the Colorado River is a legal person capable of bearing the rights to exist, flourish, regenerate, and naturally evolve. We were taking aim at a long-established notion in American law where nature is only defined as property. And whenever human beings define something or someone as property, that is a step towards objectifying them and ultimately destroying them. So in American law, nature, who gives us life, has no rights and is only defined as property, while artificial legal entities like corporations do have personhood and do have rights. And we believed that this is a primary reason that we've landed in the environmental mess that we were currently in.
Was there a precedent at that time for a river being considered in that sense, in personhood?
That's an interesting question. In terms of American law, no, there is no precedent for that. And a lot of people think that rights of nature is this new novel concept. But the truth is traditional humans have always considered beings like rivers to be sacred, to bear something like rights. Traditional human beings have always considered their responsibilities to take care of major ecosystems like rivers as one of their most sacred responsibilities. So while there is not any American legal precedent, we think that the entirety of human history will show that humans have for a long time observed things like rights of nature.
Will Falk, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is an attorney and activist, and he represented the Colorado River in court. He tells the story in a book of essays called How Dams Fall. You can join the conversation here on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You know, rather than go into the legal books and into the law library, I mean, I assume you did some of that too, but you wanted to get to know the client. So how did you essentially go out and embrace the Colorado River?
Yeah, so whenever a client comes into my office seeking my counsel, I always ask that client who she is and what she needs. And right after we filed the lawsuit, I decided that that's what I wanted to do with the Colorado River. You can't bring the Colorado River into the courthouse. She's much too vast. So I packed up my car and decided I would travel along the Colorado River asking her who she is and what she needs in as many places along her banks as I could and throughout her basin as I could.
And you write about finding what you know the headwaters of the Colorado River in La Poudre Pass in the Rockies, obviously west of Denver, or west of the Continental Divide. You thought you'd find wilderness there. What did you see instead?
Yeah, I found a big dam, the Long Draw Dam with the Long Draw Reservoir. I found a huge irrigation ditch that is dug right at the headwaters of the Colorado River and is designed to drag her waters across the Continental Divide over to the Front Range of Colorado. So I was expecting to find the beginnings of this beautiful and wild being, and what I really found was the first evidence of the Colorado River's domestication. The first evidence of humans controlling her and sealing her water for their own use.
The demands on the Colorado River's water are huge. I mean, even in a so-called normal year, which of course we're having a hard time finding of late. But I mean, even in a wet year, there's a lot of demands for the water, aren't there?
There are, and there's some pretty absurd problems with water law in the West, especially concerning the Colorado River. Most of the Colorado River is divvied up between seven states, some native tribes, and Mexico. But the number that they are using for this, they estimate that the Colorado River is 15 million acre feet of water. And they came up with this number in the 1920s at a time when even the scientists who came up with this number then knew that this was a very high estimation of how much water the Colorado River really is. For the last 20 years or so, the Colorado River has never been above 14 million acre feet. So they've divvied up more water than actually exists in the Colorado River, and this is a primary reason why the Colorado River no longer flows to the ocean and hasn't in about 50 years.
And so you quickly come to a realization that you share with us in the book, and the direct quote is, "The Colorado River is no longer a river. She is a slave to water. Whom?"
Yeah, so one thing that I've learned through my career as an environmental activist is that oppression is always linked to resource extraction. That's true whether we're talking about the forced labor of human slaves or whether we're talking about the exploitation of fossil fuels, exploitation of other resources that we steal from the earth to benefit humans. And I think that the Colorado River is a river that, in the American imagination, is this really wild being. The Colorado River is the river that John Wesley Powell famously floated down in his wooden rafts in the 1870s. The Colorado River is the river that carved the Grand Canyon. But when I actually went and visited with the river and traveled with her, I realized that the Colorado River is a very domesticated being. Human beings exert a lot of control over her, and she simply isn't this wild being that we would like to imagine her as.
Well, and it's interesting because you think in terms of her being a slave. You have an eye for detail, too, and you spotted a Confederate flag in the employee parking lot at Grand Valley Diversion Dam. That sort of underscored the slavery point for you, didn't it?
It did, and it led me to research some of the technological history happening at the time that American slavery ended, and I found the work of this biologist William Catton, who estimated, and this was in the 1970s, so the numbers are probably even worse, but he estimated that each American in the 1970s had about 80 ghost slaves, and a ghost slave was defined by him as the amount of energy that one human slave could produce just with his or her muscles in their lifetime. and that, you know, even after the American Civil War ended, and we freed African-American slaves, we quickly learned how to exploit even more energy from the natural world through things like fossil fuels. And so I just, that connection really struck me as really sad. While I'm definitely glad that we ended chattel slavery in the United States, I'm also sad that one of the things that we did after that is learned how to gain even more energy by exploiting the natural world.
Will Falk is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an author, attorney, and activist, the author of the book How Dams Fall, on representing the Colorado River of the first ever American lawsuit seeking rights for a major ecosystem. He's taking a little tour of Oregon, hosted by the Oregon Community Rights Network. It'll be in Roseburg at the Public Library, 6:30 on Thursday, Eugene at the Eugene Garden Club on Friday at 6:30. You can talk to him now on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. There's a vignette in the book that begins as a bit of a domestic sort of situation. You're babysitting your nephew, but you end up watching a documentary about the vaquita, a kind of porpoise. What is happening to that animal, and how does it connect to the Colorado?
Yeah, the vaquita porpoise are endemic to the Gulf of California, where the Colorado River would naturally flow into. As I mentioned before, she no longer reaches the Gulf of California. But the vaquita are, I think there's less than 20 vaquita porpoises left in the world right now, left in the Gulf of California. They're the world's smallest marine mammal, and they are affected by the fact that the Colorado River doesn't connect with the ocean. There are certain nutrients that fresh water delivers into the ocean that the vaquita porpoise really needs. But a bigger threat is fishing nets in the Gulf of California. Over the years, the vaquita have been caught inadvertently in fishing nets. And it looks like now that they've lost genetic viability, and their total extinction is just a matter of time. And it's a situation that we're seeing that's become all too familiar to us today. You know, many scientists have dubbed the current era that we're living in the sixth mass extinction event. And this extinction event is happening at a rate faster than any of the other five. We're losing as many as 200 species a day. And some of the most vulnerable species on the planet are those in fresh water, like the endemic species that live in the Colorado River. So a recent study by the Zoological Study of London found that already in the last 50 years, we've lost 81% of freshwater species on the planet.
Yikes.
That number to me is devastating.
Well, so let's talk about rays of hope, if any exist. I mean, obviously the Colorado's got a number of issues. I wonder if you're heartened at all by what's going on with the Klamath River, where, number one, the Yurok tribe declared rights for the river, much as what you talked about in the lawsuit for the Colorado. And there's also a discussion of removing four major dams from the Klamath River.
Yeah, I think that one of the things I found through Rights of Nature advocacy is that this is a concept that is very intuitive to people. Once people hear about it and think about it a little bit, they do start to think, you know, why does the natural world, who gives us life, not have rights, while corporations have rights, while human beings have rights? And you know, there's been some really positive expressions of people embracing rights of nature. The people of Toledo, Ohio, in February 2019, actually voted on a city charter amendment called the Lake Erie Bill of Rights, which granted rights to Lake Erie. And in that election, 61% of the 15,000 people who voted to give Lake Erie rights. 61% in electoral politics is a big majority.
It is.
So that was a clear expression from the people that they want rights of nature. And usually environmentalists are kind of framed as being anti-majoritarians or somehow in the minority. But I think what I've learned through this work is that this is actually an idea that people really want to see enforced.
And what became of that lawsuit? Was it did you get to get any traction in court, or was it dismissed out of hand, as I often see with cases that try on new kinds of environmental law in courts?
Yeah, so the Colorado Attorney General reacted very aggressively towards us, and within weeks after we filed the lawsuit, threatened us with what are called Rule 11 sanctions. Rule 11 is a part of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure that are reserved for frivolous lawsuits. So what the Colorado Attorney General was saying was that our lawsuit seeking meaningful protections for the Colorado River, which is drinking water for 40 million Americans, was in fact frivolous. And Rule 11 sanctions can come with financial penalties, and it can also come with lawyers having their license to practice stripped from them. So this, again, this was a really aggressive move. I think a really terrible thing to do considering how bad a shape the Colorado River truly is.
So the lawsuit has been dismissed, or has it gone beyond that? What's the fate of the suit itself?
The lawsuit has been dismissed. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I guess we'll see what the next steps would be here. A lot of talk, though, about not only rights for entities, as we talked about with the Yurok Tribe granting rights to the Klamath River, but community rights as well. And it is the Oregon Community Rights Network that is hosting Will Falk on his mini tour of Oregon, talking about his book, How Dams Fall, on representing the Colorado River of the first ever American lawsuit seeking rights for a major ecosystem. As you mentioned, 40 million Americans get the drinking water for the Colorado, so a lot to talk about here. Newport tonight. What's the venue in Newport, Will?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
All right, but certainly for the folks in our listening area and Roseburg, the public library on Thursday at 6:30, and Eugene at the Eugene Garden Club on Friday at 6:30. Again, sponsored by the Oregon Community Rights Network. Will Falk, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you very much for having me. It was my pleasure.
All right, take care.